Okay. Hello, we are on time. Please welcome Eva.
Hello, everyone. So I'm Eva Sarkenu. I'm excited to be here. And for the next 20 minutes, we will talk about open source dependencies and how to manage their vulnerabilities. Before we start, a few things about myself. I lead the product security team at Mattermost. Mattermost, in case some of you don't know, it's a collaboration platform for mission-critical work. I was previously at Auth0, acquired by Okta, a principal product security engineer there. I've lived in a few different places. I'm currently in Athens, Greece. And with that, this is our agenda. So we'll start by explaining why third-party dependencies and their vulnerabilities matter. We'll evaluate different software. Well, we will explain a process to evaluate different software composition analysis tools. We will see how to roll out such a tool, and finally, how to triage the findings. The reason we have this agenda is because it's mapped to what I call a dependency management journey, or a secure dependency management journey. Before we start talking about any SCA solution, we first need to understand why we need to do that. And we need to do that, we need to understand the risk that vulnerabilities in third-party code carries. Once we can do that, we can start thinking, okay, this is a problem we need to solve, and we can start gathering our requirements, and based on those, evaluate some tools. Once this is done, then we can start evaluate a tool, pick one, roll it out, and then do something with the findings. And we will cover this journey today. So why do we have this talk today? Why do we talk about third-party dependencies and their vulnerabilities? I'll start by saying that it's important to keep in mind how a software is comprised. I would say that in big projects, it could be half and half. In smaller ones, the third-party code can even be higher than the in-house code. What does this mean? It means increased attack surface. Now, there is a valid point to be made that any time you add new code, you add new attack surface. Either that's in-house code or third-party code. There is, however, one significant difference between those two, which is control. And in case of third-party code, lack of control. So for your in-house code, you can control your security processes, a security review. You can have static analysis tools scanning your PRs. So you can be proactive around the code that you end up having in your software. You don't have this option in third-party code. You either use it or you don't use it. And this is where this increased attack surface comes into play. Now, it's also important to understand that managing vulnerabilities and third-party dependencies is not just a security best practice. They carry real risk. And the best way to remember is the Log4j issue back in 2021, where a critical vulnerability in a library actually caused severe issues in software using this library. So usually we spend more time into our in-house code and the vulnerabilities, what we call in our software, and we often like make a second-class citizen the dependencies and their vulnerabilities. And examples like Log4j remind us how important it is to also keep track of our third-party dependencies and their vulnerabilities. Now, with that set in stone, before we go into evaluating different solutions, we need to define what are our goals. And I split them into two categories, proactivity and reactivity. And this, for me, these are the two pillars of a security program in general. Again, if you think about your in-house code, you usually do some proactive, so you have a proactive approach, security reviews, some security testing maybe. And because you are also realistic and you know that things will get missed, you also have a reactive approach. We usually call this vulnerability management. It's a similar process here. So for reactivity, what we're looking is, it's pretty obvious, address the dependencies that, the vulnerabilities that we have from our third-party dependencies. And for the proactive part, we want to make sure that once we start working on this, like building a process and a program around this, that we don't keep adding vulnerable dependencies. We will come back to this slide a bit altered to explain more in detail how we can do that. But this is something to keep in mind going forward. With that said, let's talk about, well, I forgot to mention SCA is software composition analysis. I'll just be using SCA going forward. Why to evaluate such a tools for this solution? Well, imagine like going over all your dependencies, all their transitive dependencies, and then finding out if they have vulnerabilities. There are tools out there that can help us with that. So let's figure out what's best for us. Now, one thing that often, I think we often do something which I don't agree with different tooling, is we have a problem, we go out, we find what are the different popular tools, open source, commercial, I'm not going to suggest any, and then we try to understand which fits better for us. I'm actually suggesting the exact opposite so that we remove this initial bias of looking online, which is understand your problem, define and document your requirements, and be clear about them. And then in the next two slides, I'll actually show what kind of requirements these could be. Now, it also helps your evaluation if you assign them a label. This will help when you actually evaluate tools and you know, well, this is a must-have. That's pretty nice. I could live without it. And once you've done what I call your homework and you're clear about what it is that you really need, then you can start looking for different tools to evaluate. Usually, the requirements you've created, you can answer them from the docs for the biggest part. So you can do that, and then I say pick three. The reason I say this is time and effort, like restrictions, for further evaluation. Now, an important asterisk, what we mean about evaluation. Another common mistake we're doing is we evaluate the details, but not the core. What I mean by that is SCA solutions give us a very hard promise that they can give us complete and accurate results about all the vulnerabilities of all the transitive dependencies. This is a hard promise. So when you evaluate, I would say get your source code, include dependencies, ideally dependencies that have a transitive dependency with a vulnerability, and test if the tool will find it. Like, really test the SCA engine. You can also test all the other requirements, but like, pay attention to that part. These are some examples about requirements. I'm not going to go over them, but you can get an idea. The QR goes to the spreadsheet with the requirements. Just a few notes. Usually, languages and package managers are your must-have requirements. Your organization uses some like package manager, some languages. If a tool doesn't cover them, it doesn't really cover your needs. And what I have in the third one is this zero to minimal findings inconsistencies. This goes back to the robustness of the engine that actually gives you the results. You can have some like more detail depending on your requirements. And again, one comment for the reachability. It's very difficult to get it right. If you think that you need reachability, which means making sure that your code reaches the vulnerable function or the vulnerable dependency, test it out. So where are we so far? We discussed what is a risk, we discussed what are our requirements, and what is a process to evaluate tools out there. Now, what are we going to do about rolling? We selected a tool and now we're ready to roll this out. How can we do that? I'm listing two different options here. The first is roll everything at once. What I mean by that is you can integrate your tool with all the repositories and then start triaging. There is one caveat. If you have many repositories and they have many dependencies and many vulnerabilities, you'll get a huge number. And it feels chaotic. I've been there, and like you see, and I'm like, where am I starting from? Another option is what I call a phased approach. And I'll give an example here, and then I'll actually tell you what we did at Mattermost. So a phased approach could look like the following. You make a list of your more important repositories. Max 5 is just a random number. You need to just, again, like time box this effort. And then you can have maybe a second phase. When you start the rollout, you integrate your first repository. You wait X amount of days. X depends on like the how many efforts you can put, how many vulnerabilities it ends up having. After that time, you can integrate your second repository, and by that time, you make sure that your critical and high findings are mitigated. And you go on. Some factors that you can consider when designing those two options. are different teams responsible for different repositories? If so, you can do them in parallel. Yes, as a security team, the security team will have a bit more work to help the engineering teams. But engineering teams working on mitigating the finding, if they are different, we can parallelize that. How many vulnerable dependencies this repository has? If there is a culture of regular maintenance updates and you have very few findings, again, you can either group them in the phased rollout or you can just do it all at once. All at once also means how many repositories do you plan to integrate? Are there a few? Maybe it's okay if you do it like the all at once option. Do you have too many? Somehow group them and then phase them, like do them in phases. And again, to be realistic, what's the team like capacity and workload? Both the security team and the engineering teams. So depending on those factors, you may go for a all at once, a phased. We went for a phase, but not like the one by one. We actually like stunk ranked our repositories in terms of priority and the most important ones. Then we said, okay, which team owns which repository? We found out that we can do some parallel work, and we actually ended up having three small phases. But if you think of phases, it's a phased approach where we did three buckets of repositories. Three worked for us because of how our teams are structured and how the repositories owned to those teams are structured, but that's an example. I'll go back to this slide, the reactive approach and the proactive approach, because this is when we roll out the tool and we need to think about those two goals we discussed in the beginning. In the proactive approach, once you integrate, make sure that you scan the PR level. So one thing is to scan your main branch and see, okay, I have these dependencies, I need to fix them, which is actually the reactive approach I just said. But for the proactive one, you need to make sure that you start working on what you have as vulnerabilities, but you don't add more. And to do that, you can have a check at your PR. It sees if your manifest file has a change in version. If it has, it calls your SCA tool. If there is a vulnerable dependency, I would say fail the check and discuss like the security team with engineering team and find a solution. Otherwise, you would end up keep being reactive as more vulnerabilities get added. Now for the reactive approach, if you saw the phased approach I showed before, I said highs and criticals. This is just for a risk-based approach, like adding a few repositories and going through all the findings regardless of severity, means that you are leaving other repositories with highs and criticals to wait. This is why here it mentions a risk-based approach. Now, let's go to triage. We're at the phase of triaging the findings. How to do it? I'm usually suggesting a time box investigation that aims to answer two different questions. The first one is very simple. Is this a test dependency? If yes, we can skip it. And the second one, which is difficult to answer and goes back to the reachability discussion we had earlier, is is it exploitable in our systems? So is the vulnerable dependency, or even better, the vulnerable function of the dependency, reachable from our code? Now, the second question can be hard to answer, especially if you think of transitive dependencies of N depth, and that's why I'm saying time box. And also, this is why I suggest that you balance the time between doing the investigation and actually going and updating the dependency. It may not make sense to even do this time box if it's, I don't know, a minor version that you go and you update it. Another thing to keep in mind is that updating is not always an option. Well, there are many times where there is no fix available. What can you do there? Notify the maintainer. We are in an open source conference. Like, let's work with a maintainer, notify them, and see what's their appetite. Maybe they would like to work on, they don't have time, contribute. Like, you can work on addressing the finding, contribute, and then both your project and all the other projects will benefit from that. Sometimes maintainers are not responsive. Maybe there is an unmaintained library. It's possible that you may need to explore alternative dependencies offering the same functionality. But these are things that we can keep in mind. Now, slowly closing, how to do this dependency management effort like a sustained thing. Track the findings and track their resolution for two reasons. First, to make sure that you work on them. And secondly, because you give a signal to your organization that those findings are equally important to your in-product vulnerabilities. Like, make them a first-class citizen. Whatever process you have for your in-house vulnerabilities, use a very similar one for your for the vulnerabilities and dependencies. The second one is that once you do the initial rollout, you may think that you're done. Because if you think about it, I mitigated all the existing vulnerabilities, I added a PR check, so no new ones. But wait, the existing ones, we may find new vulnerabilities. So this reactive approach never really ends. The initial rollout is usually the heavy lifting, but you will still get new vulnerabilities that you would need to mitigate. And that's actually why it's good to have a regular maintenance schedule. This will also help you a lot with those lows that is very difficult to get any buy-in to fix, especially if there are dependencies. So having a regular maintenance schedule of updating dependencies in general across your repositories will help a lot. So this is all the journey we covered. As you see, you can do the first three phases once. The third one is a repeatable process. A heavy lifting in the beginning, but a repeatable process. And with that, some key takeaways. Choose the tool wisely. If you need to do some initial integration between your tool and your systems, do it in the initial rollout. The more integrated your tools are, the more easy it is for the engineering teams to feel it better. The other thing is what we discussed before. When you roll this out, have a clear strategy for addressing the findings and for having this proactive approach. But I'll emphasize, before you do anything, like, have a plan. It will get, it can become stressful when you get all the findings. And as you probably saw in this presentation, this is an org-wide effort. It's not a security team only. It's not an engineering team only. It's an org-wide effort. It needs time, it needs investment, especially in the beginning. Get agreement, get buy-in that for the next few months, we will need to allocate some time and effort in this initiative. That's all I had.
We have 7 minutes for questions.
Regarding reporting to a tool like Jira, etc., I've made some observations. First, the nature of the findings. I mean, we used to have CVE numbers. Okay, NVD being slow, etc., very often replaced by OSV or GSHSA first. But so there is a dynamic nature of those findings. And then if you report to Jira and such tools like a fire and forget approach, it might happen that in a complex environment, it might happen that people talk about various identities. If, in case you don't keep those tickets dynamically. And the second thing is, if you have a really complex application, it pays off to have vulnerability tickets, which have a supervisory approach, both management and developers, because they can see how far some teams are already fixing things in case it's not trivial, both from a management perspective and which colleagues we can ask for help approach, for example.
Yeah, that's true.
That has been proven very successful on my side.
And I think one thing that this reminded me is Jira tickets should not be a fire forget. Like, they should come with some sort of SLAs. If you have some SLAs for your in-house product vulnerabilities, maybe you can relax them a bit, again, because you need agreement from engineering, but don't forget them. Yep.
Two small questions. What is your opinion of the state of the products available, but not any specific product, but just the general state of the product available on reachability, exploitability of the vulnerabilities in dependencies? And also, have you considered using OpenSSL as a scorecard-based use of dependencies in the strategy?
I used to like a year ago or two, I was in the SSF one working group. We've evaluated scorecard. We haven't had the time to roll this out. For tools and reachability, I'm very, very skeptical. I'm yet to find a tool that does what it promises. It's a very difficult problem with reachability. I can understand direct dependencies and reachability. I'm yet to be convinced about the transitive ones.
Quite simple. So I'm curious, what do you see as the biggest source of friction for teams triaging these functions?
That's a good question. They often don't understand the risk. So they don't understand why they need to spend time on this. When you have an in-house product vulnerability, you have steps reproduced, they can actually see things happening. When there is a transitive dependency, especially a transitive, where proving the risk is very time-consuming for a security team, persuading engineering teams to work on that, it creates friction. And the other one is, if there are no, major upgrades is a friction. Like, if it's a minor or a patch, usually people are fine. When you tell them to upgrade, to two major versions app, and they need to do lots of code refactoring, they don't like it. or if there is no available fix, so they need to go and see alternative dependencies, and then maintainer, as we said, is not responsive. So they need to go find alternative dependencies. This means that they also need to do some code changes. In any, the more effort, the more friction, because it's the risk involved is not that clear as with the in-house vulnerabilities. Can you repeat the question?
Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Is there a good way to educate engineering teams to maybe think about what dependencies they use?
Yes, this is a very good one. That's a very good point. The question is that addressing vulnerabilities and dependencies is one part, but shouldn't we really educate engineers on what dependencies to use and what not to use? And this actually, I think, goes back to the scorecard, where the OpenSSF, the OSSF one, where vulnerabilities, dependencies, you get a scorecard depending on on different metrics. The higher it can be maintained, it can have security advisories. There are many different factors in there. So yes, this is a very valid point. This dependency management, secure dependency management, is one part. But educating what kind of dependencies you introduce to your code is it's equally important. Yeah, thanks for the point.
How many people at Matomos or other companies are actively or proactively looking for vulnerabilities in third parties, given the size of the product? And can you give us some numbers of the effort required to have
that? Yes. If I understood correctly, the question is, at Mattermost, how many people need to be involved in this process that I described? It's definitely our team, which is the product security team. We do the trias. We sometimes do also some heavy lifting. Like, if there is no fix available, we may do some research on this. And the maintainer is not responsive. What else can we use? We did a more systematic approach to this a year ago. We do some initial work, so it's the product security team. And then we do regular maintenance updates. This helps a lot. And the other thing is the way we our engineering team operates, usually there are specific teams for specific repos. And within those teams, there is usually a person who is, has taken like the ownership of updating the dependency. The good that there is less context switching for the whole team if there is one person. It's not the most fun thing to do, but that's how we do it.
Okay, let's thank Eva.